We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to the Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. AFA at the Core here on American Family Radio. As I mention often, there's multiple ways to keep up with the program. We have our website, afr.net. afr.net's a website. That's our URL. We have the American Family Radio app as well, available for you to download on your mobile device, on your tablet. Wherever you download applications, mobile applications, you can do so. The American Family Radio app is available on multiple platforms, including Apple devices, Android devices, Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Alexa, and the list goes on. So wherever you listen to music, radio, talk, commentary, podcast, go ahead and download the American Family Radio app. You can subscribe to the Core podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And then lastly, if you want to watch previous episodes of the Core, you can go to our streaming platform, streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. You can watch previous episodes of the Core there, create you a free account. Not only access the Core video, but you can access so much more content, all AFA-produced documentaries, short films, Bible studies, and other educational resources, all aimed at transforming culture through training the body of Christ in a biblical worldview. So that's what our focus is here at American Family Radio and American Family Association. We're going to have on some special guests the second segment and the last segment of the show today, so you're not going to want to miss that. We're going to have on a pro-life lawyer out of Minnesota to talk about her work in Minnesota and the work being done there to rid the state of abortion. So we'll talk to Renee. She's a lawyer out of with True North Legal out of Minnesota. So we'll talk to her. In the second segment, we'll also talk with Jamison Taylor, who's our Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs with the American Family Association. We'll talk with him in the last segment about where we go from here. Where do we go from here now that Roe v. Wade is overturned? Abortion policy, the policies of saving babies is now up to the states. Where do we go from here? So we'll talk to Jamison Taylor about that in the last segment of today's show. Well, jumping to Scripture, Psalm chapter 30 is where we are this week. Psalm chapter 30. David says in verse 11 that you have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have loosed my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness that my glory may sing your praise and not be silent. This is verse 12 now. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever. So that's Psalm chapter 30, verse 11 and 12 is where I want to focus our attention today. So David describes how the Lord turns his mourning into dancing. Why does God turn our mourning into dancing? So that we can, in return, praise him for his goodness. And that's what, you know, the life of the believer is really all about. We can't lose focus of this, you know, if with pop culture and things today, you often get the sense or get the impression that we are here for ourselves, but boy, is that wrong. We are not here for ourselves. As Christians, we are here for a purpose, and the purpose is to honor and glorify the Lord Jesus Christ in all that we do. So this life is not, Scripture says this life is not our own. We've been purchased with a price. The price is the Son of God dying for our sins. And so a challenge for our audience today, a challenge for myself, is to focus less on yourself and focus more on serving God and his kingdom. And that will set us on a path, on a trajectory for success What is success? Well, I'm talking about success in the eyes of our Creator, God. So that's what success, that's where the definition of success needs to come from. Moving into some of our stories for today, you know, the we often, many politicians and talking heads and people who want to weigh in on the issues of the day as it relates to American culture, they often blame inanimate objects for the problems that we face today. They often blame inanimate objects. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, let's talk about guns. Let's talk about shootings. The focus for the Democrats has historically been to focus on how bad the guns are. The guns are so bad. Well, the guns are just objects, tools, inanimate objects. They can be used for good or evil. Guns are not inherently good or inherently evil. Guns are like money. They can be used for good or they can be used for bad. It depends on who the user is. It depends on who is handling the object. And I've got this story out of California, and this doesn't surprise us, but it is important to note. And there's some hypocrisy here that we're going to point out. But Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill allowing gun crime victims to sue gun makers. This is very, very important from a legal front. And we saw this take place, I believe it was the Sandy Hook shooting up in Connecticut. But we saw where I believe a gun manufacturer has been sued before successfully. I think it hasn't happened often. It's rather unprecedented, but it has happened maybe once or twice in the past. But it's a very dangerous path to go down where you hold the manufacturer of a firearm liable for the actions of a end user or the actions of a firearm possessor. To hold the person, that's like holding a car manufacturer responsible because someone was arrested for driving under the influence or a DUI. No, it has nothing to do with what kind or make or model the car is that the person's driving. The reality is that they were under the influence of drugs or alcohol when they were driving. That's the burden is on the person who committed the crime, not the vehicle. And the same could be said about this. Here's a report out of Breitbart News. Well, this is actually a Politico report. Politico reports that the legislation Governor Gavin Newsom signed was sponsored by Assembly Member Phil Ting. He's a Democrat state rep out of San Francisco area. The new law means that gun makers could face lawsuits if their products are abnormally dangerous. That's a legal circus term right there. Abnormally dangerous. Somebody want to define that? Back to the story. The new law means that gun makers could face lawsuits if their products are, quote, abnormally dangerous, end quote, and are sold in a way that lets them be illegally converted or end up in the hands of people who are prohibited from owning firearms. Wow, we are placing a big burden on these inanimate objects. Newsom tweeted a video in the lead up to signing the bill. He used the video to claim that gun makers have shielded themselves from any liability. Well, imagine that. Imagine a private corporation having their lawyers work to shield themselves from liability. That's standard operating procedure. Which company makes a product and doesn't shield themselves from liability? I mean, think about it. Who designs a product that could be used for good or evil and then doesn't shield themselves from liability? They all do it. Think about how many agreements you sign with like 50 pages of disclaimers. It happens all the time. And I'll actually bring up a good point on that here in a few minutes. But nonetheless, that's what's going on in the state of California. So, you know, the the people who, number one, they don't like the Constitution. And speaking of not liking the Constitution, I just read a story where a survey showed that, like, most Democrats say that the Constitution is racist and sexist. Yes, yes, the paper Constitution is racist or sexist, even though nothing in it is anything of the sort. But the same group that don't like the founding of our nation, they don't like our founding documents, they don't like the Bill of Rights. Who needs a Second Amendment, right? Who needs a Second Amendment? Well, these are the same people that don't like guns, they don't like firearms, they want to ban them, they want to outlaw them, because they think that magically we're going to have a better country, a more safe country, if we ban the use of firearms. What would this look like? You know, what would it look like if we banned the use of firearms? Well, I came across this study. This study has to do with, well, okay, we know the media focuses on when firearms are used for evil, when firearms are used for bad. Of course, that makes headlines. It stays in, you know, it holds headline for a week or two. It's the highlight. The focus of the story is that a gun was used for an ill or an evil purpose. Well, this study looked at, well, okay, how many guns are used for good? All right, how many people use guns for good moral purposes? And here's what the study found. The study found that there are a minimum of 60-plus incidents in which a concealed carry permit holder, so someone legally possessing a firearm in public, used a handgun to stop a mass shooting. The report, the study authors note that there is no reason to believe that this list of 60-plus incidents is comprehensive, given how little media coverage is devoted to these heroic acts, point made that I said a few minutes ago. In addition, we make no attempt here to list here the vast number of defensive gun uses in general that are reported daily in the U.S. Well, these 60 incidents of legal firearm owners, possessors, using their guns to prevent evil or to stop evil, the 60-plus incidents listed in which concealed carry permit holders stop mass shooters occurred in the states of Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Illinois, and the list goes on, Texas, Washington State, Wisconsin, among others. So various states, probably at least 20-plus states, if not more, where this data was pulled from. The incidents occurred, the data was pulled from December of 1991 to May of 2022. And then, of course, they provide detailed examples of the firearm owners stopping evil. And so that's not going to make headlines, though. I mean, these stories, it actually happens pretty often, probably every week, if not every month at a minimum, where you have a legal firearm owner that prevents a mass shooting or prevents a harm being done against other individuals. So this is actually pretty common, where you have someone who, you know, they prevent someone from breaking into their home, they prevent someone from being assaulted, they prevent someone from being killed, all because they have a firearm and they use it appropriately. And so instead, you know, what should our focus be? All right, what should our focus be? Number one, we have to understand that the human heart is sinful. The human flesh is sinful. So evil will always persist in some form or fashion until Jesus returns and a final judgment takes place. So sin will always be here on this earth. But we need to focus on punishing the wrongdoers and not punishing inanimate objects such as firearms. Firearms can be used for good. Firearms can be used for evil. We need to punish people who use them for evil, and we need to encourage people to use them for good. AFA at the Core, I'm Walker Wildman. Glad to have you with us today. We'll have a special guest next segment. You're not going to want to miss it. Be back in a few.
AFA at the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Well, we like to bring in people who are fighting for good across the country and doing so in the interest of other American citizens and for the interest of our nation and ensuring that we have the freedoms, that we maintain the freedoms that our founders intended, and that we everyone gets the chance, the opportunity at life, liberty, to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, I want to welcome to the show Renee Carlson. She's general counsel at True North Legal out of the state of Minnesota. Been working in the pro-life issue for several years. Renee, welcome to the Core.
Great to be here with you today, Walker. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And tell our audience before we jump into the battle is taking place in the state of Minnesota and other states as a result of this Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe and return it to the states. Tell our audience a little bit about True North Legal, how you guys began, and what you're working on now.
True North Legal is a legal initiative of the Minnesota Family Institute, which is actually part of the Minnesota Family Council, and we advocate for life, family, and religious freedom here in the state of Minnesota. We like to think of ourselves as boots on the ground here in the Midwest. True North Legal is really unique because we're not just one-dimensional. We actually engage in education efforts, in policy, and in litigation in the state of Minnesota. So we think that it's an all-encompassing approach to defend these really critical issues of life, family, and religious freedom. We also work with many allied partners and have enjoyed that co-laboring because, as you know, Walker, it takes many, many people to come together to fight the depravity that we have in this world. But we are confident that as we put our hope and faith in God and work hard, that we will continue to see victory.
Renee, I'm in the Southeast, so I'm not as intimately familiar with Minnesota and the laws at the state level there. But tell our audience, because you guys have been involved in some legal cases as it relates to Roe v. Wade and Minnesota state law. Give our audience a background of where Minnesota has stood on the life issue over the last few decades. And then where you are today, and what is the battle in Minnesota as it stands today?
Sure. Well, I think that Minnesota isn't unlike most states historically, where at one point, abortion, specifically in the common law, was looked at as criminal. But as we see the abortion jurisprudence sort of move through this different trajectory and become influenced by national abortion jurisprudence again, Minnesota really is just like any other state that's been influenced by it. So I'd say around in the 50s or the 60s with the Griswold case, which was a pre-Roe case, which established the right to privacy, not relating to abortion, but about marital privacy and the use of birth control. Minnesota was influenced by that right to privacy theory. And so, eventually there's various lawsuits in Minnesota. And finally, in 1995, there was a Minnesota Supreme Court case called Doe v. Gomez, in which the Minnesota Supreme Court held that the Minnesota Constitution provides a right to abortion based on this right to privacy. And the Minnesota Supreme Court claimed that this sort of right to privacy exists in various sections or a combination thereof in the Minnesota State Constitution. So that's where we are today. So when the Dobbs decision came down and Roe v. Wade and Casey were overturned, it didn't make that much of a difference for Minnesota because we have this landmark state decision that really codified the abortion rights in Minnesota.
So the state Supreme Court has done like the U.S. Supreme Court did, where they pull quote-unquote rights out of their pocket. That's nowhere mentioned. So what's the state Supreme Court makeup now? I mean, there has to be an effort underway to get justices on that court who recognize that every human life is worthy of protection from conception to natural death. What's the status in that fight? Because we can't allow abortion to continue forever in Minnesota.
Well, this is a critical period in Minnesota. This is election season, and you know, we'll see what happens at this point. I mean, we can only base our knowledge off of the previous decisions of the Minnesota State Court. And right now, the decisions indicate that, you know, we're staying with this constitutional interpretation of Minnesota's right to privacy.
Okay, let me ask you this. We're talking about the courts here, but as you know, as a lawyer, courts don't make laws. They simply issue opinions and rulings based on their interpretations of the laws or what they believe the intent of the law is. What are the laws on the books? What has the legislature and the governor passed in recent decades that speak to this issue?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that gets us to the main issue and a very significant decision and experience that we had in Minnesota this past week. There was a district court decision in Ramsey County District Court just issued again this last Monday. And there's been a case going on challenging almost all of the pro-life laws that we have on the books over the last 3 years. This was a lawsuit filed by an OBGYN, a nurse midwife, and a group called Our Justice, which claims to provide support and financial assistance for women seeking abortion. All of these plaintiffs claim that the laws, the current, again, pro-life protections that we have on the books, they claim that they violated the Minnesota State Constitution and were therefore unconstitutional. These plaintiffs sued the Attorney General, the Governor, Nursing Medical Board, Minnesota Department of Health. Again, a very comprehensive lawsuit. So, unfortunately, we got this opinion on Monday, and the lawsuit pretty much eviscerated most of our pro-life protective laws in one fell swoop, because the court held that, again, going back to that Doe v. Gomez decision, these laws were unconstitutional based on this fundamental right to privacy. Of course, they got into different legal analysis about the right to privacy, equal protection, free speech, but again, all based and premised on this Doe v. Gomez decision to springboard us then into this sort of lockdown of unrestricting access to abortion in Minnesota and taking away these pro-life protections. And again, I just want to make clear that True North Legal and Minnesota Family Council are 100% behind standing for human life and the protection of the preborn. But we do recognize that when there are laws on the books that have some sort of regulation for the abortion industry, this serves women and young girls very well. And now we have a devastating opinion in our state, and we're going to have to work hard after this decision.
Yeah. What are the next steps? Because I believe this case you're talking about that has developed in recent weeks wasn't at the state Supreme Court level. It was at a lower court level. What are the appeal procedures? How many court layers are between this district or area court that ruled on this that you're talking about in the state Supreme Court?
Yeah, well, this is a district court decision, and so the next step would be the Court of Appeals, and it's up to the Attorney General to decide if he's going to appeal this decision or not. And I can't, you know, pretend to know if he's going to do that, nor do I know what issues he would bring on appeal. But if he did, you know, the next layer is the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Would be the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Who's the Attorney General? Refresh my memory.
The Attorney General is Keith Ellison.
Oh, okay. I see where we're going here. I knew it was a Democrat. I knew it was a liberal, but I could not recall his name. And this is, Renee, talk a little bit about you. We didn't plan to talk about this, but this is important. The role of state attorney generals, also local district attorneys' offices, and how if you don't have good people who properly understand the Constitution and the rule of law in those offices, oftentimes it doesn't matter what kind of laws you pass if you don't have good lawyers, good attorneys general to defend these laws, case in point in Minnesota.
Absolutely. It's critical to have people in office that understand the Constitution, that understand how to apply the Constitution, and understand the rule of law. Again, right now we're in a critical moment where we've got some primaries coming up for actually the Attorney General's race, and then will eventually in November be there in elections ready to evaluate who the current Attorney General should be in our state. Mm-hmm. And you're right about the district attorneys and others. I think people underestimate the power of municipalities and local law and the impact that lower jurisdictions can have on the entire state, and even the ripple effect that they can have. If you have a decision in an urban county, other district courts, and even sometimes, you know, other county attorneys will want to follow suit with whatever someone else is doing. So it's kind of, you know, the philosophy, if you will, the judicial philosophy spreads like wildfire. So it is absolutely critical, not only to have people in the administration and in the highest state positions to be someone that understands the Constitution, but as you say, also district court attorneys and even assistant county attorneys and city council board members and others. I mean, yeah. As you know, some of these Supreme Court decisions that we've seen started out, you know, based on a decision from a committee in, you know, local municipalities. We see especially now the takeover of the administrative state, where if you cannot pass a law and you cannot legislate to your objectives, then you will go through the backdoor channels, which are the administrative procedures, and try to pass things so that the local public either is out of the loop or that you don't have to go through the same legislative process.
Yeah.
And that's troubling. And I think Minnesota is notorious for that, this backdoor administrative process to try to pass things without the public knowing.
Yeah, and this really, the Roe v. Wade overturning, the Dobbs case, this really, it either did one of two things, Renee. It either closed the door, like in states that have clear laws that have been upheld multiple times that that protect babies from conception. In those cases, like Mississippi and a couple others, you know, the legal point is kind of moot, not that it won't resurrect itself, but in states like Minnesota and other states around the country, this Supreme Court ruling really didn't close any doors. It just opened up a big fight at the state level as to how the state is going to protect babies. I mean, this is going to be a fight that is going to take place for years and years and years, if not decades, around this country at the state level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that this still is an opportunity, though, for states to defend life in the way that, you know, we should be doing, and
yeah.
in the way that the Constitution instructs us to do, and also to set the record straight in their own states with respect to the interpretation of their own Constitution, which is what we're going to have to do here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, you know, we had this district court case that impacted many of our, you know, protective laws, things like physician-only laws, hospital law, mandatory delay law, mandatory reporting laws with respect to informed consent, and even our two-parent notification law. So, I mean, we're talking about things like, you know, the impact on parental rights. We're talking about, you know, something like a physician-only law that isn't as simple as, okay, now a qualified APRN can perform an abortion, but actually, you know, impacts a woman's health overall if you don't have somebody of the highest profession who's actually performing these abortions.
Yeah.
And it's astounding if you read this opinion and you look at what the state experts have said, you really do have a better understanding of the abortion industry and where they're headed. And if you want, we can talk about some of those laws and I can highlight some of those things.
Yeah, you know, Renee, the reason I mentioned the effect of Roe one way or the other, depending on what state you live in, I just want to encourage our audience to not fall asleep at the wheel. I mean, this is you know, a lot of people are lauding this as it was a massive victory, so we don't need to overlook the massive legal and moral victory in getting Roe v. Wade overturned. But this is no time for people who support life to sit on the sidelines, take a break. I mean, this is a time really to step up even more than before. And so, Renee, I appreciate the work that you guys are doing up at True North Legal in the state of Minnesota, aiming to use the court system to defend laws in the state of Minnesota and protect life. Thank you so much for coming on the Core, and we'll have you on again.
Great. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Renee Carlson. She's general counsel at True North Legal in the state of Minnesota. And she's working True North Legal is working to find ways to defend the state laws in the state of Minnesota. But at the end of the day, as she noted, you know, it's up to the state attorney general, which is a far left Democrat, Keith Ellison. It's up to the state attorney general to go to the courtroom and defend the state laws. I mean, these are state. We've had the same problems in Mississippi, where you have good laws on the books, but you don't have the proper lawyers, you don't have the proper attorney general in place to defend the laws that are on the books. I mean, this is a very, very serious travesty in that you have, you know, the left always talks about democracy, democracy, democracy. But, these conservative states are actually the ones that are doing the representative democracy, in that we're going through proper channels to pass good laws. We're going through the state legislature, going to the governor's desk to sign good laws, to put them on the books, to advance biblical morality at the state level. But then you have like one judge who doesn't agree with the law and has a wrong interpretation of the Constitution, or you have one attorney general who doesn't show up to defend the state laws, or they show up and they do a lousy job arguing in defense of the state laws. So people in Minnesota, pay attention to the elections going on there, not just this cycle, but every cycle. And make sure that you vote for people that have a proper understanding of the U.S. Constitution and will go to court to defend the laws on the books in the state of Minnesota. And the same message could replicate or could go out across other states in this country. AFA at the Core, I'm Walker Wildman. We have another guest, Jameson Taylor, on with us next segment. You're not going to want to miss that. Stay tuned.
AFA at the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to AFA at the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the show. I'm your host, Walker Wildman. You know, one thing we do is not only do we bring on special guests that bring insight on the issues of the day, all from a biblical perspective, all from a perspective of a Christian worldview, but we do so with the aim of educating the audience on what's going on around the country, because we need to be equipped. We don't just need to hear good stories, which you can go certain places and all you get is good stories, good news stories, and we do provide some of those, but we also need to know what the other side is doing, if you want to call it that, or what our ideological opponents are doing, so that we can be equipped, we can be prepared to defend our values, not just from a rhetoric standpoint, but also from a legal standpoint. And as we go to the ballot box every year and hope and aim to put people in places of authority that share our worldview, that share our values, that's the goal of bringing various guests on. And now we have on with us a familiar voice to the Core, Jameson Taylor. He's Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs for American Family Association, works with Rob Chambers and others in the Governmental Affairs Division, aiming to advance the core values of AFA at the state level around the country and in Washington, D.C., by the way. Jameson, welcome to the Core.
Thank you for having me on today, Walker.
Well, Jameson, we've talked with you before, and you and others have been involved in this Roe overturning goal and project, or that's not a good term for it, but this effort to undermine the legal status or the precedent of Roe v. Wade, which has now effectively been done. So you and others have been involved in this for several years now, dates back to 2017 when the Mississippi 15-week law really originated. But here we are. The Supreme Court issued a very strong ruling that gave the authority and the jurisdiction to states to handle the issue of abortion at the state level. And so With that being said, tell us where are the angles of attack? What are the main areas where we see our ideological opponents, those who believe that you should be able to kill an unborn child in the womb? Where are they headed? What's their top rhetoric as it stands today?
I'm so glad we're talking about this today, because I think listeners need to be aware that, you know, one, we need to celebrate and be thankful for this historic overturning of Roe v. Wade, and just an incredible thing that God has done. But, you know, just as we have been thinking through, okay, what comes next after we overturn Roe v. Wade, the other side has been busy as well. They have been putting their pieces into play and thinking about what might be next. So most immediately, if you live in a state like Mississippi, like Louisiana, like North Dakota, what you're seeing around the country are lots and lots of lawsuits. You're seeing, to begin with, lawsuits against state trigger laws. Trigger laws are laws that states put in place just in case Roe v. Wade should be reversed. And now that it has been reversed, those laws are going into effect, and they are making abortion illegal in those states. So here in Mississippi, for instance, we have a trigger law that was passed in 2007 by, in fact, a Democrat legislature. It was sponsored by a Republican, Joey Fillinghame, but it was passed by a majority Democrat legislature, House and Senate. That law is now in effect, thanks to a district court special judge who let the law go into effect, but Mississippi's trigger law is on appeal to our state Supreme Court. So we also see other trigger laws around the country. For instance, in North Dakota, they have a trigger law that is being litigated in court. In Louisiana, they have a trigger law. You had a judge in New Orleans who said that I am not going to allow this law to go into effect. Then the case was moved over to a court in Baton Rouge, and the law went into effect for a couple of days. And now another judge has said, no, I'm not going to allow this law to go into effect. We expect that will also be appealed to their state Supreme Court, and we'll see. So, you know, in some cases we're going to win, in some cases we're going to lose. We heard about what's going on in Minnesota, where they have pretty strong pro-life protections, but yet we saw a judge strike that down. And, you know, the thing about some of these judges is they don't play nice. You know, as you know, they are not playing fair. They are not going to interpret the law in a fair way. For instance, in North Dakota, the abortion clinic is making the case that the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness means that abortion must be legal. Abortion must be constitutional. Now, I think we can all agree, we could guarantee that when Thomas Jefferson wrote those words in the Declaration of Independence, and when the folks that wrote North Dakota's Constitution, they in no way thought that was making abortion constitutional, that they were creating a constitutional right to abortion. But so, in effect, this judge is lying. I mean, he's misleading people. But we see activist judges all around the country that are willing to do this. So if we think about what are the three ways that the pro-abortion side are going to respond. First, lots and lots of lawsuits. I talked a minute ago about state lawsuits, but we also have a very important lawsuit in federal court here in Mississippi. We can talk about that in a minute. Second, though, we're seeing the abortion wars, so to speak, shift to the battlefront of chemical abortion. And states are going to have tough questions to deal with as to how to regulate that, which we can get into. Then the third thing to think about are abortion ships. You know, these, I call them death ships. Mm-hmm. Basically, and you saw a doctor in California mention, well, we should just have a floating abortion clinic in the Gulf of Mexico to provide abortion to women in states in Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Florida. This is not a new idea. You've seen these abortion ships for decades off the coast of Europe, for instance, countries like Portugal and Spain that limit abortion. Ireland used to, and still to some extent, has restrictions on abortion. Off the coast of Latin America, you've seen these abortion ships. So this is not a new idea. The good news is, though, that states and localities can do something about it.
You know, it's really very crafty, but evil, crafty in an evil way, to think of ways to skirt laws that are for good and for protecting people, to think of ways to skirt those, such as the ways you just provided there. Tell us about before we jump to the chemical abortion topic, which I do want to discuss. It's very fascinating and does need to be discussed, and a lot of people probably aren't aware of the details of that debate. What about the federal lawsuit that you said is going on in the state of Mississippi? What is that about?
So we have a company, Gen BioPro, which sued the state of Mississippi in late 2020. At that time, Mississippi has a law on the books that bans all abortions, both surgical abortions and chemical abortions, non-surgical abortions. They are the maker of the generic version of RU486, basically the abortion drug that causes abortions until about 10 weeks. And, you know, I'm sure women are using it beyond the use of beyond 10 weeks. But they are a maker of the chemical abortion drug that's commonly known as RU486. They are arguing that Mississippi does not have the authority to ban chemical abortion because that should be under the Food and Drug Administration. That should be under the federal FDA. And I think this is a very important lawsuit, not just because of the abortion issue, but because of the issues related to what states can regulate and what the federal government can regulate. When you know, this idea that abortion law should be under the states, that has been settled by the Supreme Court. And if suddenly we have a company that says, no, this is the FDA is going to be the one to decide this because, you know, somehow chemical abortion is different than surgical abortion, that opens up a really huge lane for a lot of problems. I mean, you can make similar arguments on guns, you can make similar arguments on really virtually anything because, yeah, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, we saw under COVID, just the vast powers that some of these federal agencies take for themselves to say, look, we should have control over everything.
Well,
you know, everything. And you know, that's kind of what the FDA is saying. And this company is wanting the FDA to take that control.
Yeah. But Jameson, let me intercept there or interrupt there, because this could actually backfire in a major way. I mean, it also could go very, very sideways in the fact of undermining pro-life laws. But what if, I mean, with the Supreme Court makeup, basically the Clarence Thomas Court that we have, I mean, that's a very risky lawsuit in Mississippi that could result, to the contrary, in the U.S. Supreme Court, if it went through the Fifth Circuit and then up to the U.S. Supreme Court, ruling that states can regulate drugs at the state level.
Yeah, or at least, you know, I think the court is going to have to consider this issue of, okay, where's the line between what the FDA's authority is and what state authority is? Mm-hmm. There has to be a kind of common sense balance that the FDA and other agencies like CDC, they can't just have authority to regulate absolutely everything. So of course, we see these federal agencies like the EPA, they're claiming that authority essentially. You know, they should be able to regulate anything that touches the weather or, you know, whatever it may be, carbon release, whatever. The good news is we did see a Supreme Court decision this term that kind of checked some of that power as far as the EPA goes. And this Supreme Court is very sympathetic to the idea of reining in that federal administrative state, reining in those federal bureaucracies. So I think you're right. This could be a lawsuit that ends up being to our favor. And, you know, that's the good news.
Yeah.
We know that God has given us this victory in overturning Roe v. Wade, that God's providence is in charge. And, you know, likewise, the folks on the other side, they're going to be trying all kinds of things. They're very clever, but we have, you know, strong U.S. Constitution, and we have God on our side, and we're certainly praying for wisdom and prudence, and praying for these judges. But it's important for folks to know that the pro-abortion radicals, they're going to be trying everything they can to increase abortion here in the United States.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's really no time, I mentioned this last segment, it's really no time to rest, because this battle that we're facing to protect babies in the womb is not going to let up. Now we have experienced a tremendous roadblock that has been removed, or a tremendous victory in that the Roe precedent is now in the past, and states do have the legal authority to regulate this issue without hindrance from the Supreme Court or any prior rulings. And so that's a huge victory in that it unleashes the power of states to regulate this. But that's that's only good if states are doing the right thing. But as you know, Jameson, states around the country, some are going the complete opposite direction in that they are making abortion. They're moving more radical as it relates to abortion. So, Jameson, we're really going to have to not only defend states that are protecting babies, but also start going on offense in these radical states like California, New York, and Illinois and others, so that we can ensure that babies are protected there as well.
That's right. And I think it's politicians can no longer take cover behind the U.S. Supreme Court, that especially moderates who have said, well, you know, I'm pro-life in certain cases, or depending on who they're speaking to, they might say, well, I'm pro-abortion in certain cases. They're going to have to make a decision. And I think it's important for voters to hold them accountable and to have clarity on where these politicians stand as far as abortion goes. Now, for better or for worse, what we've seen is that radical pro-abortion politicians, they don't stop. I mean, what I mean by that is that they tend to support abortion until the day before the baby is born.
Yes.
And, most Americans do not support that type of policy. It's a horrific type of policy. But once you get someone on record saying, well, that's what I support, then you show how radical they are, and most Americans don't agree with that.
Yeah, and
I think too.
Sorry, I'll give you 30 more seconds. We got a music coming up, but go ahead and wrap up your thought.
Yeah, just I think one thing for us to look at is we cannot leave our future in the hands of fickle politicians and judges. Here in Mississippi and in other pro-life states, we need a state constitutional amendment to protect life. We need to get that on the books now while we have the momentum. So that's something important for Mississippi, for other states to look at as well.
Absolutely. Jameson Taylor, Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs with American Family Association, thanks so much for joining the Corps.
Thank you, Walker.
All right. That's Jameson Taylor. Glad to have him on with us today. So Jameson Taylor says, and I concur, now let's get state constitutional amendments on the books around this country to solidify the view and the position that all babies deserve to be protected at all cost. AFA at the Core, we'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.